many times my duties were over at 5 o'clock in the evening at school. And so I'd have, it'd be light until 10, 11 o'clock in the evening. I would go out and paint in the areas. And I did that around different places in England and in France. And I was able to carry a small amount of paints which I purchased in London, and some brushes. I needed paper. My wife sent paper over to me, generally small, quarter sheets. But that was big enough to carry along with all my other stuff, too, with the war. So I found an old German cartridge box, which I was able to put all my equipment into. As soon as I'd get a few paintings, I'd ship them home. And in 45, they had an exhibition of my paintings from England at the Fine Arts Gallery. And I'll never forget my wife saying that she had an awful hard time. They couldn't put a very large mat on because they couldn't get much mat board. Mat board was sort of scarce around during the war time. Yeah. So they put a little narrow mats on them, and they weren't even framed when they had them on the exhibit there at that time. And a little later, they had another exhibition of some of my French paintings at the La Jolla Museum of Art. And people would, they had talks about them, the receptions and that. And they saw all kinds of things in the paintings that I didn't even know existed. But that was through the eyes of another party again, seeing things into them. I had first hit France by, I painted some of the ruined scenes of the war scenes and up in the northern part of the French coast and that, and which weren't the pleasantest, some of the bombed out places and buildings and so forth. And I said, nuts, after three or four of them, I couldn't keep on doing that type of thing. I wanted to paint something that was a little bit better, a little bit more, a nicer type of thing that we could do. And so then I started painting this thing. So I had time to paint quite a few things. I don't recall the exact number, but I imagine it was around probably 100 paintings during the almost 2 years that I served overseas as a camoufleur. And some of the things we did in camouflage proved very interesting. They didn't always give you the best art possibilities, but we had a lot of fun trying to work things out. I forget that up in Normandy we set up dummy airfields for night work. We had a fighter field going in one direction, and about 5 miles from it, why, we'd set up in a marsh area, something like that, a line of Christmas tree lights, all the same color to give the effect of the runway lights on a fighter field. And we set up put two or three men there with an anti-aircraft gun and a transformer of some kind, and with a telephone from the regular field, so when the Germans were coming over, we'd hear about it. They would call in to us, switch all the lights off the fighter field, and we'd turn on these Christmas tree lights, and all we had to do was to fool the bombardier for 2 seconds, and that was enough. He'd be off his track, you see, and these lights would show up. Then for daylight, we would take a pasture or field of some kind, and we'd take a caterpillar and scrape the sod off of it just to make it the dirt. And then we'd put on dummy airplanes around there. We had one factory with one group of our men that made dummy airplanes out of iron rod and Irish linen. We could get a half a dozen of these dummy planes in a truck, but they were actual size. And we'd set these up, pull them out, and set them up like it was a tent. And stake them along like they were off the runway. And from the air, they looked like the real plane. In fact is, there are many times some of our planes were disabled. They tried to land at these fields, and of course we had no facilities there. They were just We had an anti-aircraft machine gun there, and that was all the facilities, and a tent or two for our personnel that were at the field. But these were just decoys that we used for daytime flight. That was just some of the thing, but we worked on setting up. I had many close calls. Remember roads were bombed out just a minute or two after I'd left that intersection. I'd be bombed out by them, or shelled out, but shelled for the Germans. The first night in France, I got caught in the hedgerows between the American infantry and the German infantry. They were shooting machine guns at each other, and I was in between. But I came out without a scratch. But whenever I had the opportunity, I would paint and go out in the evenings and do that. And that day, double daylight saving time was my grace period. And towards the end, I was stationed at Sèvres, France, and also at Neuilly, France, in charge of rest homes. And that gave me time to go into Paris and to Neuilly, just like La Jolla is to San Diego and Neuilly is to Paris. And I could go in, or I could requisition a car and take the place any place I wanted to in Paris and paint in Paris the street scenes and that, which I did. And then I had to show 18 paintings in a special services art show in Paris, France, and receive the first award in watercolor prize in that show in Paris, France in 45.
Do you still have that painting?
That's the one up there, Compiègne, France. That's what I have up there in the studio right there.
Remember,
the building hall. Right there. They had 18 paintings of mine on display at that show. That was when I came back then, why they had another exhibition of my paintings at the Fine Arts Gallery then. Mm-hmm. That time.
In the 1920s and 30s, getting back a little earlier than World War II, there was a group of artists called the Contemporary Artists of San Diego, which included Alfred Mitchell, Charles Freese, Charles Riffel, Maurice Braun, Otto Schneider, Everett Jackson, and so forth. Do you have any anecdotes on any of this group, and would you care to offer an opinion as to which was the best or seemed to be the best of the group?
Well, Maurice Braun, I remember him very well, going into his studio one day, right at his home, and he had his easel in the living room on a beautiful carpet, and it was painting. And I've never ever seen a painter that was more meticulous than Maurice Braun, painting on a beautiful carpet in his living room, on an easel, and no paint on the floor. The other time I was traveling in Colorado, the summer of, I don't forget, 35 or 36, and we were in some little restaurant having a bite, eat a coffee shop. I looked on the walls and I looked at it. It looked like to me like I had seen something like that before, and I examined them, and here were some paintings of Maurice Braun up there in this little restaurant. And I was very surprised to see him in a place like that, an out-of-way place up in the Canadian, in the Colorado Rockies. Otto Schneider I had him as a life drawing teacher. We hired him when I was a student at State College in the, I think, 29-30, for the first life class I ever had at State College. And it was the Art Guild the student Art Guild there hired him, and we got models so we could have something to draw. They had no life classes of any kind in the city of San Diego at that time that you could go to, and some of us wanted to continue our life drawing. And so Otto Schneider was one. He had classes with the San Diego Academy of Art, which was operated by Duvall and his wife. And they would have then start classes, go out on weekends to paint on the spot too. I remember going out with him a couple of times. I remember going out to Hamul and a few places in the back country that way. And most of his work was done in oil, but I would take on watercolors and go along. I went out with him several times that way to do it. Then later, Everett G. Jackson was a student at State College at that time too, working for his degree in painting. And we, in the after Otto Snyder, we hired Everett G. Jackson to teach life drawing. It was a different concept entirely in comparison to Otto Snyder. Mm-hmm. But you could get information about drawing from both of them. Otto Snyder was more the realist, and Everett G. Jackson was more the modern and modern style at that time that was in vogue. And I would call this stovepipe period that he was in, more than anything else. Everything very cylindrical in that way, where Otto Snyder would want to be more realistic and so forth. They didn't have too much, didn't have very large gallery, but they did have some things going on, and they had someone taking care of it for them. It continued for several years. Charles Riffel became well known for his crayon paintings, done with ordinary wax crayons at that time. And it didn't have, well, it just wasn't the funds for all of these materials today at that time. And so he used ordinary wax crayons and did several nice things.
I didn't know that.
With that.
I didn't know that.
No. With wax crayons.
No.
He went on and made some murals for different schools under WPA. He did one for the Russ Auditorium, big panel on either side, and he did one for the Snyder Continuation High School. And then finally that group broke up because I think it was more or less the Depression. It just wasn't the money in town to keep it going. I don't know the exact reasons for it. As to which I think is the artists were good in their various own ways. Everett G. Jackson was the modern of the group at that time. Morris Braun was a rosy-colored painter, painting the rosy-colored scenes, landscape scenes. Charles Fries was more or less semi-impressionist, early impressionist school. Charles Riffel, I'd say, was the impressionist of that period. And was, but I'd say they're all good. Fries was a pioneer in the whole area. Braun became the best known throughout the country.
Mm-hmm.
Everett G. Jackson became the illustrator of the group,
mm-hmm.
the illustrating of the books. So I can't say which one was best because they each were good in a different area.
Yeah, that's true.
I think that's, I would hate to say, I don't like the idea anyone saying, this is the best artist.
Yeah.
We all are excel in certain areas. And they don't compete with each other then to the degree that they would.
A group that that seemed to have come along a little later, Fred Hawks, Dan Dickey, and Bal Barenciano, helped form the Allied Artists Council. Could you do any elaboration on...
Well, Bill Barnsana was amongst the earlier ones. I watched Miro, Bill Barnsana, paint the mural at the Roosevelt Auditorium. I was teaching at Roosevelt at the time and had classes in the auditorium, and she was on the scaffolding painting them. And it was interesting to watch her, and that's how I became well acquainted with Belle Barnsana. She later did a mural at La Jolla High School and also at the La Jolla Post Office. One of the La Jolla Post Offices is still up and intact.
Well,
it's only one of the of those three that's still in public view right now. The one of the La Jolla High School, as I understand, has been destroyed. I don't know about the one at the Roosevelt Auditorium. Fred Hawks was the avant-garde person of the group. Dan Dickey's used to love to do figures. And they started the Allied Art Council, worked on it. I don't recall whether I was never active in that group. I don't remember if I was an actual member or not. I remember the group and that, but they didn't have the influence in San Diego that some of the other groups have had, as I recall.
Mm-hmm.
They tried to promote it, but it didn't go over too good. None of the groups, like the only group that's really been successful called Allied is the Allied Craftsman's Group. That's the only one of three meetings.
I think that evolved.
That evolved from this group.
Yeah.
And I know I've had contact with them. I've given talks to the Allied Craftsmen, and I don't recall that I was an active member of that group at one time or another. I could have been, but I don't recall.
I'm sure you knew Frederick Whitaker. Will you tell us what you can about him?
Frederick Whitaker is a wonderful man. I first heard of or read about him as a member of the American Watercolor Society, and he was on the jury one year that I had three paintings accepted in the American Watercolor Society. And I remember that name then being on the jury at selection, that they selected three of mine. That was sort of tops, I think, as far as goes. Now they only allow one painting per artist, and
mm-hmm.
but at that time they would allow a maximum of three, and I had three selected that one year. I felt very happy about it. I didn't know that he was around this area at all until summer 65. I was away all summer over in the Warren Islands, and I came back where I had a message that I should get in contact with the Whitakers, and that they'd move to La Jolla. You might have some common interest to that. And so that's when I first met Frederick Whitaker, and he was a very helpful man and had a lot of beautiful ideas and had done so much for the artists on the East Coast all the time, and for the artists in America, especially in the watercolor
mm-hmm.
field, and became known then as Mr. Watercolor USA. And throughout the years of our paths have crossed back and forth here in this area, and have felt very happy to have made my acquaintanceship with such a well-known personality in the field, and one who's had the welfare of the artist as a whole throughout the United States.
Mm-hmm.
I think when he passed away this past year, past winter. It was a sad event for all of us. And I was felt very bad when he was losing his eyesight and couldn't paint anymore. Because I had watched him demonstrate and talk to him about how he, his process of going through his paintings and so forth. So I had some personal contact with him. He's been down here in this studio at different times, and both he and his wife. And so we've had some contact with him. He served as the jury for me up at the exposition at Del Mar, and his wife has too. Mm-hmm. So I've had contact.
Was she an artist also?
Yes.
She was an artist.
In fact, is I think in many aspects I like her work better than he is. Hate to say that, but
would you compare his work with Millard Sheets, or were they two different?
Two different types. Millard Sheets is much freer, looser, bolder, automatic in design and quality that way, in composition than Frederick Whitaker's. Frederick Whitaker is more or less the realist, the realistic area where he stayed in that light, where Millard Sheets is much bolder and freer, dramatic, and he's traveled more than Frederick Whitaker has, and so he's more of a cosmopolitan there, attitude to things throughout the world.
How would you categorize your style as compared to the two of them? Would you be closer to one than the other, or would you be nowhere near either one of them?
I'd say probably in between.
In between?
Happy medium.
Several critics have said I'm modern impressionist, is what my work is. Categorize it mostly.
Well, that's a nice label.
Yeah. Contemporary impressionist. And yet sometimes it goes one way and sometimes another. I've tried to work in many different areas, different styles. My master's thesis was the development of watercolor techniques in North America. And so I studied all the various techniques. I got mine in the 50s, 53. I studied all the various techniques I could possibly get hold of in both Mexico, Canada, in the United States. And so I followed out, tried to develop some of those techniques myself that I had read about and studied, so I could know how to do.
Mm-hmm.
And so you'll find quite a variety of styles in my work, which you won't find in many of the artists. One type of thing will be one done one way, another one will be done a different way again. A lot of times people say it can't be done by the same artist, some of these things you see in this room right now.
There's quite a variety of
styles and techniques that I use in my painting. One type of thing I'll do one way, another type, it depends upon where I'm doing it, whether I'm doing it on the spot, or I'm doing it in the studio, or I'm doing it in a demonstration for some art group or something like that.
Of the watercolor teachers you have known, which ones would you rate as the best?
I've had many watercolor teachers in different places. I believe the better teachers is Millard Sheets. We first became acquainted with in 1930. Because I understand it's still one of them. I've talked to Millard several times in the past year. He's been down in the San Diego area and talked to students who've studied with him in the last years or two, and he's still one of the top teachers, and he's recognized that way by his colleagues throughout the country. He's done more for the artists than majority of people have done. Another one I think was very good was Edward Bowden from England, who has a different concept of watercolor entirely, but very proficient in his ways, and has the English type of feeling. Another strong watercolor teacher was W. Phillips from Banff, Canada, and he loved to portray that particular country, the Canadian Rockies, and that particular scene, and I enjoyed studying with him very much one summer at the Banff School of Fine Arts in Banff, Canada. Another one teacher who inspired as an art teacher but not as a watercolorist was Jose Gutierrez of Mexico City. He was not the artist that the others were, but he was rather a more inspiring teacher. And I think that is one of the points. He was also a technical advisor for people like Diego Rivera, Roscoe, and some of the others in Mexico. And one of the developers of the acrylic paints in the world. It was founded by generally three people in different parts of the country all about the same time in the world, and he was one of those. He was a technician more than he was an artist, but he could inspire you about painting, and that was the thing that I obtained from Gutierrez. As for the local watercolor teachers, I'd rather not say. I know too many of them. Some have their strong points in certain areas and their weak points, and I'd rather not comment on that particular area. As a whole, I'd say they are average or below.
Thank you, Mr. Allison, for a very excellent interview. Thank you.